Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. You're listening to a special interview in anticipation of the 2013 Just Food Conference. Just Food connects communities with the resources and support they need to make fresh, locally grown food accessible to all New Yorkers. Just Food also has a food justice program that increases awareness and action around food and farm issues and advances policies for a thriving local food system. The 2013 Just Food Conference will take place on Friday, March 29th and Saturday, March 30th. For more information and tickets, visit justfood.org.
All right. Hello and welcome. My name is Nathaniel Coburn, and I'm here in the studio with Aaron Fairbanks.
Hey, guys. It's Aaron from the Heritage Radio Network. Excited to be kicking off another section of the Just Food Conference pre-interviews with Nathaniel.
Today, we'll be continuing our preview series of the upcoming Just Food Conference. We'll be speaking with workshop presenter Elizabeth Henderson, farmer, author, and pioneer in the world of community-supported agriculture. Elizabeth has been growing organic fruits and vegetables for over 32 years, and since 1998, she's been farming with Peacework Organic Farm in Wayne County, New York, producing shares for Genesee Valley Organic Community Supported Agriculture, now in its 25th year. She's one of the authors of The Real Dirt, Farmers Tell About Organic and Low-Input Agriculture in the Northeast, and Sharing the Harvest, A Citizen's Guide to Community Supported Agriculture. You can check out her farm online at www.peaceworkcsa.org. She'll be presenting a workshop at the Just Food Conference entitled Diversifying CSA Membership, How to Include Low-Income People in Your CSA. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here today.
First off, I'm sure you answer this question a whole lot, but once more, could you give us an overview of what community-supported agriculture means, how it works, and what it does for consumers and producers?
Well, community-supported agriculture is a model for family-scale farms that was developed in the United States back in 1986 by Robin Van En and other people at Indian Line Farm. And it was developed in response to the ongoing crisis that farms face in this country, where even today the number of farms continues to drop. There was a latest report from the Department of Agriculture that the farm numbers have dropped again. And that's because it's such a struggle for family-scale farms to make a living from their farming. The price that you get for food just does not cover all of the costs of production, and it's not enough money to pay a living wage to the farmers, and it's not enough money to pay living wages to the people who work on farms. So community-supported agriculture was envisioned as a way that customers who really care about a farm could become members of a farm and join it, pay in advance of the season, and in doing that, kind of give a loan to the farm so the farm would have the money to buy all the supplies that they need for the season and not have to go to a bank for operating loans, which many farms do year after year. And then with members would share the risk with the farmers. There's no other market that exists that I know of in this country where the customers share the risk. So they pay the same amount of money. If the weather's great, they get more. If the weather's not so good, they get less. If there is a disaster, they share that terrible wipeout with the farmer. And, you know, the terrific floods that happened 2 years ago on some of the CSA farms in New York. My friend Lisa Bludnick, her crops were totally wiped out by flooding. And the members of her CSA, instead of asking for their money back, raised $4,000 and gave it as a gift to the farm. Oh, wow. So that's what community-supported agriculture is about. It's about people becoming what Carlo Petrini calls co-producers with their farmers, understanding the farmer situation, and paying really as much as they can so that farmers can stay in business and do a really good job of concentrating on growing the best possible local, usually organic or biodynamic food for people who are part of their community.
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth. That's a wonderful overview. Can you tell us a little bit about the workshop you'll be conducting? Because it addresses this concept of paying up front, and that's obviously crucial to the farmer, as you just explained. But I understand it can be cost prohibitive to be a member of a CSA sometimes.
Well, putting low-income customers together with low-income farms is kind of a shaky equation. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the people who are doing CSA in New York State really care about finding ways to get their food not only into the hands of people who can pay the highest amount, but people who have all different income levels and all different ethnic groups. So we've come up with a whole bunch of ways of keeping the farm going while allowing lower income people to become members. So that's what the workshop is about, sharing those ideas.
In a little bit, I'd like to get into some of the specifics of what those ideas might be. Do you find that CSAs are subject to the same rising food costs as we're seeing in more traditional markets? Is this affecting everybody? Like, even if you try to go to a I guess it's still alternative, but it's kind of a closed system, right? You pay for what you get, but are costs rising year to year to be a member of a CSA?
Do you mean that fee for joining a CSA, or do you mean the cost of the farm for producing the food?
Both, actually. The cost of inputs as well as...
Yes. All the above. Mm-hmm. And farmers that use fossil fuels have to pay more every year for, running their tractor. Every farms that use organic seed have seen the cost of their seed escalate way beyond the cost of living expenses. The supply of organic seed is still fairly small. It's a small market, and organic seed can cost from 2 to 10 times as much as conventional seed. So that's been a really major expense as farmers try hard to source organically grown seed. For example, organic potato seed is literally 10 times as expensive as buying conventional potato seed, because not only is the seed itself more expensive, but you usually have to ship it from Maine or Colorado.
Mm. Thank goodness.
So I'm curious, some of the production of organic produce and looking at building an organic CSA starts at a higher cost. So where do you look to for kind of mechanisms or models to create, access for low-income communities without kind of unfairly burdening the farmer?
Well, one of the things that our farm has done from all 25 years of our CSA is we charge on a sliding scale. So people can pay what they can afford. And people who either have more money or for whom the CSA is especially important pay more, knowing that they're offsetting the lower prices from people who can afford less. Our farm accepts SNAP payments. So that means that there's a certain number of members each year. It's usually only half a dozen or so, but those people pay every 2 weeks or once a month instead of paying up front. And that way they're able to pay in SNAP payments instead of cash. Farms have done a lot of fundraising so that they can subsidize share fees. Some of the CSAs that are members of Just Food, those core groups in New York City, have been very creative in doing things like setting up revolving loan funds where the CSA raises money either from the nutrition program, health program, or just by having events And they're able, with that fund, to pay the farmer at the beginning of the season, but then have low-income members pay back into the fund at different intervals through the season, thereby making it easier for low-income people who can't, you know, amass the full payment up front.
Elizabeth, you've been growing in the region for several decades at this point, and I'm wondering if you can give us a sense of how the landscape has shifted with regards to providing access for low-income residents. From the farmer's perspective, I mean, is this an area that you always had a focus on, or has that changed over time? And just curious, like, where the genesis for that you know, making that a priority for your farm came from?
Well, it's always been something that I personally have been concerned about, and the people with whom I started the CSA, we got a big boost by working with the Politics of Food, an organization started by Allison Clark in the city of Rochester, and that was the main focus of Politics of Food, was to get good, healthy, local food into the kitchens and under the tables of low-income people in the city of Rochester. So that food justice emphasis has always been important for me and my farm and our CSA. But it's also a focus for the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New York. Our mission statement is to provide organic food for all, not just for the wealthy. And so we're always looking for ways of making sure that the farms can make a living while finding ways to give access for low-income people to the food that we produce.
Elizabeth, are there barriers to entry for low-income people besides cost when joining a CSA? Like, is it just a cost issue, or are there other things that if you're trying to design a program to include more people, low-income people in a CSA, are there other things that need to be addressed as well?
It depends on how low-income you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
People who are homeless, whose lives are just terribly disrupted by being marginalized, really aren't good candidates to join a CSA.
Sure.
The CSA is good for people who eat at home regularly, have a kitchen, and cook the food. So, you know, families who don't have an adequate kitchen that isn't equipped, it's really hard for them to be part of the CSA because that food comes in relentlessly week after week. And if you aren't cooking it and putting it on your table, it will become an awful lot of compost.
Mm. I see.
I think we're going to just take a short break, and then when we come back, I want to continue this discussion of access in the CSA system. So just hang tight with us.
Okay.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, and we are on the line with Elizabeth Henderson. We'll be back in just a moment.
I just want to hold you, ooh, so nice and tight.
This one's called Let It Go by the California Honey Drops on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Just let it go now. I ain't looking for no showdown. So won't you open up that door? Tell me you want some more. Won't you stop all your keeping score now? Just let it go now. Let's talk it over. It was just this morning We couldn't get along. You kept on saying all the things that were wrong. Yeah, you did. And now you've built up such a wall.
You don't answer when I call. Well, I don't think you can hear me at all. And it hurts, but it really ain't too much to see these little things.
Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA. Since the inception of the Heritage Turkey Project, more than 10 of Frank Reese's partner farms have converted to Good Shepherd, from a corporate system whose weak protocols on husbandry, welfare, and genetics necessitated the use of subtherapeutic antibiotics at all stages of production. When Frank Reese started in 2002, he hatched 900 eggs in his barn. This year, 20,000 eggs were hatched. This is an enormous victory for sustainable agriculture and biodiversity. For more information and to order your Heritage Turkey today, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
And we're back talking with Elizabeth Henderson about her upcoming workshop for the Just Food Conference entitled Diversifying CSA Membership, How to Include Low-Income People in Your CSA. Elizabeth, you've been a part of this movement for over 30 years. I'm curious as to what brought you in the first place and how you got started back in the 80s, right?
Uh-huh. Well, it's much easier to become an organic farmer today than it was back then. Hmm. There were very few academic programs, and because I was already a parent, it would have been hard for me to go be an apprentice on a farm. Mm-hmm. So I basically learned by doing, by reading, and I had learned a lot from traveling in France, where they do really wonderful market gardening. I left an academic career. I was a teacher, and I just had to get out into nature and to do work that brought me closer to the cycles of life and death, and that would keep me true to my beliefs and principles. I found some of what I saw in academia really disillusioning, where people who had wonderful ideas didn't behave in ways that I thought were fair.
I understand.
Just curious, obviously, it met your expectation because you've stayed in the field, but when you were first getting going, I mean, maybe you can tell us a little bit about some of the challenges that you faced and why they might be different for someone in a similar position who is getting started farming today.
Well, there weren't very many women farmers when I was getting started. I think, in organic farming, starting with me and a lot of other women at that time, we really changed the gender of who's a farmer. But there were either, other farmers or equipment salesmen, or, I went into the electric store for parts for something. I had to put up with a lot of condescending nonsense that is certainly reduced today. The obstacles, I don't know, for me it was a really exciting process, and being an organic farmer and a small-scale farmer, this is such a wonderful kind of work where you're a scientist, you're creative, you can be an artist, the social dimension is enormous, and working with other people. So it's been a way of life that I've enjoyed very much. The financial pressures, I think, are maybe the hardest part. In 32 years of working as an organic farmer, I never made as much an hour as a beginning auto mechanic. And it's not that I need to earn as much as a lawyer or a doctor, but I think the work that organic farmers do is every bit as important, and it reflects on the values of our society that farmers are paid so little.
Yeah, it's foundational to life. You would think that the compensation structure would match that in some way, right?
Yeah, in European countries, A woman who works on a farm, that's actually a socially recognized category, and if she retires, she gets Social Security. If you're a farm wife here, that doesn't count.
For you, is CSA about the farmer, or is it about the consumer? Is it about the relationship? It seems to benefit everybody, but when the model first started coming around, was it in order to keep the farm going?
I think it's always been about the relationship. Mm-hmm. It's always been about finding ways for people who want the food and people who are growing food to work together so that the farmer can concentrate on the farming and the other people can support that work. A lot of the organic farms are actually biodynamic, and they talk about associative economics. Which is a concept about the people who are around the farm supporting it, not worrying about how many pounds they're getting per dollar, but keeping the farm a living, exciting entity so that the community enjoys the food and the farmer can do a really good job, which is becoming more and more challenging as our climate is changing. When I started farming, the weather was fairly stable, and you knew what you would do in the spring, in the summer, in the fall. Now you just have to be ready for whatever might happen. just very, very nimble.
Yeah,
I wanted to also tell you about exciting work that NOFA and Just Food and some of the other organizations that support CSAs in New York State are doing. NOFA New York has a neighborhood farm share project, which is just a pilot this year, where we were able to get money from a family foundation to subsidize shares for low-income people. So I've been actually working half-time for NOFA, running around the cities of Rochester and Buffalo, finding church groups and community organizations that can help recruit low-income families, and then NOFA can subsidize those shares. Just Food has done that by raising money in New York City. There's an organization called Garden Share in the North Country. There's a group of Healthy Food for All in Ithaca that does that. And we're hoping they'll all cooperate next year and into the future so that we can expand that all over the state, so that low-income people will be able to get $100, $125 off their share price through money that we'll raise.
Elizabeth, you outlined just now a couple of organizations that I think people can look into if they want to learn more about kind of innovative ways people are thinking about attacking some of these problems. I'm wondering if you could identify for us some leaders and mentors in your work that have helped shape your perspective and also are kind of your go-to people when you're struggling with issues on your farm. Are there particular books or authors or thinkers that jump out at you that folks who are tuning in right now might be interested in learning more from?
Well, for me, Masanobu Fukuoka, The One Straw Revolution, was a book that made an enormous impression on me. And also the writings of Sir Albert, recent years, it's mainly talking to other farmers whom I really respect, Jean-Paul Carton, Jody Beloit, other farmers in NOFA New York, Mary Howell and Cross Martins. Those are people whom I constantly learn from. And then it's been tremendously exciting and stimulating for me to be a part of Urgency, which is an international CSA network. There was just a Sir Albert Howard, by the way, Oh, I hate it when names don't come up when I need them. His books are the basic texts for organic agriculture and understanding about the relationship between ecology and growing food. But Urgency had a conference back in January with people from Japan and China and France, North Africa, all got together and shared ideas about CSA in these different countries. So learning what other countries are doing is really exciting and interesting.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for your time and for joining us today. Folks, stay tuned with us because we'll be having more conversations in anticipation of the upcoming Just Food Conference on March 29th and 30th. Next up on Thursday at 4:30, we'll be speaking with Jane Hodge, director of the Farm School NYC program at Just Food. You can find more information about the conference by visiting www.justfood.org.
Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie? Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie? Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie just for me, girl? Please don't give none away.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want you to save all your cherry jam.